Well, the one guy who I think could have got more than I got out of the World Economic Forum in Davos this past week is David Ansara, the CEO of the Free Market Foundation. It was a celebration of many of the ideals that David holds very precious to his heart, as we've known from previous interviews, particularly the brilliant address from Javier Milei, who's the president of Argentina. Well, what we did was we republished that on BizNews TV. And by this morning, which is only 48 hours after we published it, we have nearly 100,000 people have already watched that. So clearly, the message that Milei gave to the World Economic Forum in Switzerland is something that has resonated with the BizNews community. But David, before we go there, and I've got a clip that I'm going to play a little later that I'd love to get your insights on. Here, I get back home, and in fact, while I was on my way back home, I was able to watch in transit the press conference that John Steenhuisen called after he'd just arrived home. I think it was 2 hours after he landed. He was in a press conference on this government of national unity that seems to be wobbling. What is your take on what exactly is going on there?
Alec, great to be with you. I think on the GNU front, there clearly seems to be an asymmetry of power within the GNU and a complete breakdown in trust and mutual respect within the coalition. I mean, I think often with coalition politics, you have to work with your opponents, people you don't necessarily always agree with, your erstwhile enemies, but there must be an underlying assumption of mutual and reciprocal respect for the constituencies that each party represents. And I think that that's been way out of balance for a long time, really since the beginning of the GNU, you could argue. So whilst many of the opposition cabinet members have made hay while the sun shines, we all heard the stories about shortened queues at Home Affairs, and there's a lot of energy. Ultimately, I think the big problem is that the ANC, as the dominant partner, is just pressing ahead with its policy agenda, which has been very explicit about, very unambiguous about, wants to drive through national health insurance. The EWC Act, the Expropriation Act, was signed last week. There was huge contestation over the Bella Act. And the ANC just pushes ahead as like it's business as usual. And that is reinforcing the dominant policy status quo that has really so damaged South Africa over the last decades. So, yeah, unfortunately, I didn't think that this is working out very well.
John Steenhuisen referred to the opening of Cyril Ramaphosa's most recent speech, where he told his faithful assembled that this is a next step in the national democratic revolution. Why is Steenhuisen so upset about it? And what exactly is the National Democratic Revolution going to do to South Africa's economy?
So the National Democratic Revolution is a paradigm of thought that has really underpinned ANC policy doctrine since the late 1960s. The 1969 Morogoro Conference, the ANC explicitly committed itself to socialism and was part of the Soviet bloc-aligned countries during the Cold War, and never abandoned that policy agenda in the democratic era. So it is hostile to private property rights. It sees free enterprise as being fundamentally exploitative, and the profit motive as something to be suspicious of rather than as a driver of growth, as we know it to be. And it sees the state as the preeminent political actor in society that needs to enforce the will of the so-called vanguard elite, the self-appointed group of politicians who essentially want to control the decision-making, the resources of the country, and direct it towards specific political projects. So something like NHI is a perfect example of that. It sees the state as being entitled to having a monopoly over healthcare resources, and regardless of constitutional constraints and protections, is trying to drive ahead with that policy, which would essentially expropriate the private medical savings of millions of South Africans and lead to immiseration and very poor healthcare outcomes. Sorry, the Expropriation Act, I think, is another classic example. Doesn't see property as something, as an inherent right for individuals, as we at the Free Market Foundation do, but as a public resource to be allocated and dispersed according to political imperatives rather than market-based forces, which are essentially underpinned by choice and respect for other people's property. So that's why we're very concerned by the Expropriation Act and are planning our response to that as well as an organization. So the NDR is really a statist, collectivist philosophy. And I think we're going to be talking about Mr. Millet, who really represents the antithesis of that. And so it's very unfortunate that we're going on this kind of socialist trajectory. We're continuing on it, maybe with a few handbrakes here and there in the form of GNU partners. Whereas in Argentina, we're seeing just an explosion of liberalization and freedom as being the guiding light for that political program.
Well, we do know that right now, as we are talking, this is on Monday morning, the federal executive of the Democratic Alliance are meeting. They're going to inform us of the consequences of their deliberations tomorrow. If you were on that executive, if you were participating in the discussions, given what has happened in the past week, and I can give you some, well, not such happy anecdotal evidence from what I saw in Davos and the relationship there between Cyril Ramaphosa and the rest of the world, let alone John Steenhuisen, and there were a couple of other DA cabinet ministers. But the fact that he did not arrive for the meeting of the heads of state who were at the World Economic Forum, over 30 of them. The fact that he arrived 20 to 30 minutes late for another appointment that was quite important reflected or suggested that he doesn't really take the World Economic Forum and those assembled there, particularly at the moment where the pendulum is now swinging away from state intervention into more of a free enterprise approach. It would suggest that there are all kinds of tension. But if you were on the Democratic Alliance as executive, and you are participating in the meeting today, is the GNU rescuable? Would you be arguing for a continuation of the government of national unity, given what we've seen recently?
Well, look, I'm not a member of the DA's federal executive, so I can't imagine what it must be like being in those discussions. But I think ultimately, the constituents of the DA, the 3.5 million people who voted for the DA are going to be asking some serious questions about the reasons for participating, ongoing participation in this GNU. And I think there may have been an argument before the formation of the GNU around potentially frustrating the policy agenda of the ANC, throwing sand in the gears and trying to stop some of the most extreme policies from pressing ahead. But I think the DA hasn't been able to exercise sufficient leverage within the GNU. I think it was surprising to me that this Clause 19 of the foundational agreement that bound the parties, that it's only being invoked now. There is a formal dispute that is being declared within this, with using this mechanism, which I think is a positive step. But from what I've seen from the headlines, the ANC seems not very concerned about that. And there always has to be the implicit threat of leaving the GNU. I think that has to be on the table. Even if you do not necessarily act upon that threat, it has to be a legitimate threat. So if you're going to talk about red lines and then your coalition partners cross those red lines and you do nothing, I think that is a sign of weakness. And it gives permission to your opponents to do that again. So I think this is a bit of an abusive relationship. And from my observation, it seems that the DA partners and other opposition partners have bent over backwards to be collegial with their ANC colleagues. They refer to them as colleagues, whereas before the 29th of May, they were staunch opponents. But that's not being reciprocated. If you look at the comments of the Minister of Health saying that there's a war against NHI, that he doesn't care about the concerns voiced by civil society groups like the FMF, the IRR and others, Solidarity. He's just, bugger the consequences. He's going ahead with it, come hell or high water, even if National Treasury is not too keen on funding it. And the president acquiesces in his silence. So, the president himself put pen to paper on the Expropriation Act. He clearly doesn't care about achieving sufficient consensus within the GNU. Obviously, you only leave the GNU once, unless some other formation is formed. But I think the bargaining position has been weakened by the rhetoric that built up to the GNU, and also during the GNU, where the DA has said, well, we had no choice. We had to act in service of the national interest to save the country from a potential MK or EFF coalition with the ANC. And so that may or may not be a valid argument. But now it's very difficult for that same DA to then say, well, now we're fed up and we're leaving the GNU, because the ANC itself and the broader public can say, well, what about this so-called doomsday coalition that you warned us against? So the DA is in a very awkward position now. And unfortunately, I think it is largely of its own making. And I think what it should have been doing is being much more aggressive. We should be hearing from the various ministers, and Minister McPherson in particular, to say, under no circumstances will I implement expropriation without compensation under my watch. My duty is towards the Constitution that I swore an oath to, rather than trying to maintain some kind of civility with the ANC. He should be bringing that conflict to a head. So I'd be curious to see how this Section 19 process goes and the ways in which that conflict is dealt with within the GNU. But ultimately, you have to have bargaining power. You have to be able to follow through on threats of dissolving the government. And part of it is about shaming the ANC as well, to say, you know, it is unconscionable that you would even contemplate going into a coalition with the EFF and MK. That will help to soften the ground in terms of motivating for potentially leaving the GNU, which I think they should.
I'm reminded here of what Franz Grenier has been saying and said at one of the business conferences, I think the one in London earlier, ahead of the election. He said that the whole strategy of the ANC, inherited from its socialist forebears, is that you push the bayonet in until you hit steel. Until you hit steel, you just keep pushing. And it does appear to be very much that kind of strategy at the moment. But I'm going to take you back to the whole story of the expropriation without compensation, which really ruffled a lot of feathers in Davos, not least because the way that the world appears to be moving is in a very different direction. Let's have a watch of a very short section of President Milei's speech, for which he was warmly applauded. And as mentioned earlier, well, all the reports that came out of Davos, he really was elevated in his way of thinking. But let's just listen very closely. I would like to, in particular, get your thoughts on what he says about private property.
That Argentina had been infected with socialism for far too long, and that with us it would once again embrace the ideas of freedom, a model that we summarize as the defense of life, liberty, and private property. And I also told you that, in a way, Argentina was the ghost of Western Christmases yet to come, because we had already experienced everything you were going through, and we already knew how it would end.
You can hear in the background the original, David, of in Spanish that he was saying, and of course then the important part for the context of this conversation, as he says, we go for freedom. We are re-implementing freedom in Argentina, which means the promotion of life, liberty, and private property. Private property, which is exactly the opposite to what Cyril Ramaphosa signed into law last week.
Yeah, and private property rights are the building blocks of a free society and a prosperous economy. You really cannot have one without the other. So, and I often say that you either have private property rights or you don't. It's a binary situation. It's like being pregnant. You can't be half pregnant. You either are or you aren't. And, we at the Free Market Foundation have been campaigning for many, many years, pushing back against EWC, defending private property rights. but also advancing it through initiatives like the Kaya Lum Project, which is a title deed transfer project where to date, since 2010, we've transferred over 18,000 title deeds working with conveyancers, donors, and also municipalities to get title deeds into the hands of low-income homeowners who were once tenants of the state under apartheid. So we don't just believe in pushing back against threats to private property rights. We also want to extend private property rights to all. And you have an inherent inalienable right to the property that you own. And that goes beyond the laws and legislation that the government of the day might proclaim. We believe that this is indivisible from your human rights as an individual. You, as John Locke would say, you mix your labor with the land, and that also entitles you to transfer the value. You know, that's why money is a form of property, your savings or your investments or your assets. Yeah, and I'm just reminded of a quote by Frederick Bastiat, who was a 19th century French philosopher. He said that life, liberty, and property do not exist because men have made laws. On the contrary, it was the fact that life, liberty, and property existed beforehand that caused men to make laws in the first place. That really goes down to the foundational principle of why the state exists, is to defend you against harm, against infringements on your rights, to defend against foreign aggressors. That's why we have things like military and defense systems, and also to uphold and enforce private property rights, to adjudicate disputes. And the law is in protection of those fundamental rights. And that's why we at the Free Market Foundation and people like Javier Milei are so keen on having minimal government, a small night watchman state that does the bare essentials and lets people freely engage in commerce with each other, trade property, and upholds those principles in order for people to flourish on their own. The state is not the central actor in the society, unlike the National Democratic Revolution concept or the socialist conception. So I think we need to get back to first principles here in South Africa about why does private property exist in the first place? And it's really how you build a free and wealthy society.
Millet's point, the last point that he made in that very short clip, was we are the ghost. Argentina is the ghost of Christmases in the future for the Western civilization. His argument both last year, where he was looked at askance by many people at Davos, he'd just taken over in Argentina, and this year, where the praise was gushing, even though he wagged his finger at the World Economic Forum as promoting an agenda that he doesn't agree with in certain respects, he said this time round that it was a consequence of the policies that many in the world are following, and I guess South Africa's right up there, that Argentina got into the mess that it's in, that it needed to have his chainsaw to be taken to it. He's lots of the conversations. South Africa is still quite a long way away from where Argentina got to, but it's still following those policies. David, the world moves in trends. The pendulum swings too far one way, and then it tends to correct and then overcorrect. It does appear that the point you made earlier, that we're going in our mission on our way, as we often do in South Africa, and the rest of the world's going in a very different direction, is something that hasn't quite dawned on the people of this country yet. How would you share that with them? How would you say to South Africans, you need to tell the politicians what to do, not you being acted upon by people who really are out of step, and the consequences are there for all of us to see how ruinous their policies can be?
Yeah, so there's that policy conversation, and I think also the broader cultural discussion around the core fundamentals of Western values that respects individual freedom, that respects private property, that, you know, also is underpinned by the rule of law. And I think Mr. Millet also draws a very stark contrast to wokeism, which is trying to engineer outcomes based on what it believes as intrinsic identity markers, that you have this intersection of these various victimhoods, and that's how you allocate rights and responsibilities throughout a society. The Western conception is that you treat individuals equally, regardless of their race or their income status or their political power. So I think we need much more of that in South Africa. And I think what Milei has identified is also that there is a self-appointed elite, an administrative class, and to an extent, Mr. Trump in the United States has identified this as well. And this super bureaucracy has one thing in mind, which is to reproduce its power and to maintain the status quo. And that's why I think Milei's approach is so effective, because he understands that seeking consensus with this group of entrenched interests is not the way to achieve change. And actually, if you look at Mr. Milei's predecessor, I think his name was Macri, not Fernandez, the previous one, but efforts at reform previously didn't work because they just weren't aggressive enough. And so Milei has halved the size of his cabinet. He's cut back on the civil servant spending by about 30%. He's closing down the national airline. Public broadcast is even closing down the tax authorities and creating an entirely new one in an attempt to sidestep some of these entrenched bureaucratic interests. And these people are often unelected, unaccountable, and like I say, have an interest in maintaining the status quo. So he understands that conflict is the way to drive change. That's why that metaphor of the chainsaw is so powerful, because he wants to cut, he wants to sever those interests like barnacles on a ship. He wants to get rid of them. And by doing so, many people think, oh, he's being callous and cruel to people who are going to be losing their jobs or losing their entitlements. But actually what he's doing is creating space for freedom to flourish. And I think that's what we need in South Africa. That's why we at the Free Market Foundation have been advocating for a greatly reduced size of the cabinet. We want to have only 10 ministries in South Africa. The National Treasury, we've got a budget speech coming up next month. And what we're likely to see is a continuation of some of the trends of increased debt to GDP. That's looking at about a 75% debt to GDP ratio. And Treasury has done its best to constrain spending and have a balanced budget. But actually, the overall profile of state spending in South Africa is just far, far too large. The debt bill is larger than health budget and social security and all of those things. But we actually need to start cutting. We need a fiscal surplus like Mr. Milei has achieved for the first time in over 120 years in Argentina. Not just a primary surplus, we need an overall fiscal surplus. Mm.
The primary surplus, which is the one that is often spoken about by the ANC government, excludes interest payments, which is a little bit ridiculous because it's like saying, I'm balancing my books, but that's excluding what I'm paying on my bond every month, on my mortgage, in other words, because around 20% of South Africa's spending now is on its mortgage or on the debt that's accumulated. David, just to kind of put it all together, you said earlier that you felt that the DA should leave the Government of National Unity. Did you believe that they should have gone into it in the first place? And I ask this because there are many people in South Africa who say that they should not have participated. They should have let the chips fall as they would, because a combination of the ANC, EFF, now MK, which is much bigger, would have driven this country to a point where at last society would have stood up and said, thus far and no further. In other words, you got to get to a rock bottom, and the GNU, with the support of the Democratic Alliance, is not getting us to that rock bottom. What's your take on all of that?
So in the wake of the elections in May 2024, the Free Market Foundation was arguing for what is called a confidence and supply agreement. So that is, in other words, a minority government where you let the largest party, in this case the ANC, take over as the governing party, but you provide confidence in the form of a vote for the presidential nominee. So you let the government form, and supply is you you approve of budgets subject to some preconditions. And that is it. And any other new legislation that needs to be driven through the legislature has to achieve a majority under the normal mechanisms. And so in that sense, a party like the DA with 20-21% of the vote can actually exercise a significant leverage without having to have the downsides of being in government itself and being saddled with this very awkward responsibility of being part of this collective that actually has very divergent interests. And so we can also think of political parties in a proportional representation system such as ours as being representative of a certain set of interests. That 20-21% is significant. That is a significant constituency. And can you maximize the leverage? So I think, you know, we can maybe say this is a counterfactual, but the DA, I believe, should have put more firm preconditions on participation in a GNU. They did actually have significant bargaining power to utilize in those early days of June and July. So extracting concessions in terms of federalism, I don't think we saw very much of that. Guarantees around protection of private property rights. So if you're going to be part of a GNU, you need to make hay while the sun shines. You need to really get as many concessions from your opponents as possible. But unfortunately, what I think we've seen is just a reproduction of the status quo and even a further deepening of some of the more radical policies of the previous administration. So I think exit is an option, and it's not Armageddon if the DA had to end their relationship. But I think there are perhaps conflicting views on this within the party. I think not everybody is in agreement. I think there's perhaps a different set of interests amongst cabinet colleagues as the parliamentary caucus. You know, I think if we look at just some of the dynamics within the cabinet, I just don't think this is very functional. So, you know, you'll have, for example, the Department of Trade and Industry and Competition, Minister Parks Tau, announcing that they're going to pursue a transformation fund using the National Empowerment Fund framework to extract a kind of a 3% transformation tax. You know, I don't think anybody within the coalition was consulted on this. Minister McPherson mentioned that his own departmental officials had prepared press releases on the EWC Act without his knowledge. That's very unfortunate, but knowing what we know about the conduct of the ANC and this principle of cadre deployment, these civil servants are not neutral. They're going to be actively sabotaging the political agenda of the erstwhile opposition members of the cabinet. So, you know, my view is he should immediately suspend those officials as a show of force. He should be saying, you know, this is absolutely unacceptable, and I'm going to remove you from the department. So I think the opposition, erstwhile opposition members of the cabinet, need to start getting a bit more Machiavellian and start using the power that's available to them to try and actually sabotage the ANC and its efforts, rather than kind of tacitly standing by and indirectly supporting the ANC's agenda.
We live in interesting times, particularly here in South Africa, interesting times for the world as a whole. But on the upside, it does appear, certainly from your agenda, David, on the Free Market Foundation, that those policies are gathering great momentum elsewhere in the world, even if South Africa at this point seems to be going in the wrong direction. David Ansara is the chief executive of the Free Market Foundation. I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.